going to talk some about our hearts and some practicals. And I hope that it will be helpful, truly, that it will give us all a vision that little old me can be used by God. That little old me that I, that God will use me to help somebody else. And I know many of you have been very effective over many, over the years. Maybe some of you are new Christians and you're learning. And that's a great place to be too. Maybe you're someone who has once been very effective and God has used you in those ways, and maybe you're in a busy time of life with lots of children around your ankles, or you have a professional career and you come home at 7 o'clock at night and you're exhausted. And so the thought of trying to help more people other than the ones at your job can be overwhelming. So I'm going to try to address some of these needs and to give you a vision and hope that God can do amazing things despite ourselves. Thank you very much. And I think we'll have a lot of fun. So, sending out the workers. That is what Jesus does. And my first point is this. Jesus is willing. Are you? And I want us to look at two scriptures real quick. One in Matthew 8, verse 3. You can get to that one. Matthew 8, verse 3. And also Matthew 23, verse 4. And let's read these back to back here. Jesus is very willing, but the question is, are we in our lives? In Matthew 8, verse 3, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately he was cured of his leprosy. Great. Jesus was willing. "I am willing, be cleaned." You look in Matthew 23, verse 4. This one says, Jesus speaking to the crowds and to his disciples, and we'll pick it up in verse 2. It says, "The teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit at Moses' seat. So you must obey them and do everything they tell you. But do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them." So why am I reading these? The reason I'm reading these is because we can choose to be like Jesus, where we can be willing, or we can choose to be like the leaders here and some of the, I would say, religious people, and say a lot of good things, but not be really willing to lift a finger. And that choice is ours. And I'm grateful that God has given us this choice, because I don't know about you, but whenever I feel forced to do anything, I like totally rebel. I have to choose. I have to want to do something. If someone says, "You need to do this," I can just feel all the hairs on my skin. I can feel my hair go up. I can feel my face crinkle. Of course, I try to keep it smiling. But inside, I just get really rebellious. And I do really believe that God gives us a choice. And so when it comes to the area of helping others become Christians, ministering to them, we have a choice in that. Even though God commands us, we have to choose to be willing. And the great thing is God can use a willing person. God has done amazing things through people who have been willing. I think about the walls of Jericho when they walked around 7 times. The walls fell. God did an amazing miracle. But they were willing to walk around 7 times and probably wondered why they were doing that. The parting of the Red Sea. They were willing. Peter walking on the water. Peter was willing to take that risk and walk on the water. I think about the faith of the 4 friends, you know, who took the sick man to the roof, up to the roof. And it was because of their faith, the 4 friends' faith, that Jesus did the miracle and healed him. So these, we could go on and on. The whole Bible is full of men and women who are weak and broken and messy, but they were willing. And that, to me, is so encouraging. And the amazing thing is you have to be willing to do what you can. Not to be perfect. That's a relief to me. And I wanted to share, you know, just personally, I'm going to share some about my life and hopefully some about other people's lives. But for me, I was, before I moved to Sweden, we were living in Denver, Colorado, which was actually my dream place to live. That's where I wanted to go. And we chose to move there. Nobody told us to go. We actually chose to go and work in the ministry there. And I love the mountains. I love the mentality of the people. I love the church. I had great friends. And I was ready to just die. I was just having a great time there. But somebody who I love very dearly, God was sort of knocking on his door, my husband. And my husband's had a dream to come back to Scandinavia for many, many years. And I have been very unwilling for many years to go back there. And so, you know, the opportunity would come around and we'd say, well, we have to raise our kids, so it's not time. Or, well, we just moved, it's not time. Or, no, I don't want to go. Or I had all the reasons you could possibly think about. And Chris respected those reasons, and thus we stayed in the States. But, you know, God just doesn't give up on us. And he kept knocking. And, you know, I was confronted with this decision again because Chris really felt that God was calling him back there. And I just did not want to do it. How many of you feel that in your life at times? I just don't want to do it. You can define it. It can be a thousand things. I don't want to become a Christian, although I know I should. Could be that. Could be, oh, I don't want to become a leader. Or I don't want to follow that leader. I don't want to read my Bible like I should. I mean, it could be, I don't want to do the laundry for a month. I don't know. It is a lot of things. I don't want to go to the dating class this afternoon. Although I know. I heard that in the bathroom today. Or the singles. I think it was the singles class. So the unwilling spirit, I mean, I'm with you. We have that in us. I just thought, you know, because I'm unwilling, then that must be God's will. So I never really took it seriously. And my husband said, actually, it was a number of people that talked to me, and they said, Kim, you need to pray to God to be willing. And of course, because they told me to do that, I'm like, no, I'm not going to pray that. So I didn't. For another several years, I refused to pray. God, help me be willing. I didn't even go there. I like went all around and prayed for everything else, grandiose things, wonderful things, but never about my willingness. And thus, I wasn't willing. And I forget all the events that happened, but eventually somebody said something that really got to my heart, and I made the decision to pray to be willing. I still wasn't willing, but I just decided, okay, I will pray because I really don't want to do this. God, if you want me to do this, you have to help me be willing. And I started to pray that, very small at first, but I prayed it consistently. And I found myself in a meeting, maybe several months later, where we were discussing some issues, and out of my very own mouth, the words came out, I'm willing to go. And they rolled out, I'm willing to go to Sweden. And when I saw them, when I saw what I had said, it was then that I knew God had changed my heart. And I couldn't believe that I actually said it, but God really had worked. And I can really say that uprooting again, becoming uncomfortable, teaching and preaching in a foreign language, going away from all my best friends, my two older children being in the States, all of these things are the challenges that I faced. But I can say that I'm willing, and I have been willing, and it's really been a tremendous experience to serve the church in Stockholm. So, you know, it's amazing, and I want us to look in Philippians 2 here. If you don't believe me, that God really does change hearts. I was the most stubborn of stubborn in this area. Look in Philippians chapter 2. Just read verse 12 and 13 here. It says, therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but also much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. It is God who works in us to will. God helps us do his will. He helps us willing to do his will, be willing to do his will. And that's such a fantastic scripture to put on your refrigerator and realize that God can really help the areas where we may not feel the most willing. So the question for you today is, what do you need to be willing to be again? Or what do you need today to be willing to do for God? Or be? Or take the first step in. I'm sure there's many stories here, and we're all sitting here in our chair, and we can think, oh, it's this, or oh, it's that. Maybe it's investing again in relationships. You know, maybe you got hurt with all the mess, and you're just a little afraid, you know, to come in and just really be vulnerable, to confess sin. Maybe you're afraid to invest again in just reaching out. That's which really is mostly what this class is going to be about. The whole idea of, again, investing in relationships with the lost when so many people have left. I mean, let's face it. Let's not, like, see the elephant in the living room. Let's talk about it. Many of our dear friends have left God, or they've gone other places, or we don't even know. And that can be really hard, isn't it? I know that's hard for the sisters in Stockholm. But my thought is, you know, but will that hinder the rest of the world from getting a chance? And you have to face that question. Face it head on with a willing heart. Yes, our dear friends, some of them have turned away. In Jesus' day, all of them turned away. And it wasn't until he died that they came back. So, you know, Jesus understands this dilemma, but sometimes it can hinder us. You know, maybe we have to decide to be bold and overcome fear daily. That's a big one, isn't it? Just to be bold, to go out there again and to share with neighbors and friends and our workmates, that kind of thing. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that we have to be willing to change our family and our single lifestyle from one of serving ourselves to one of serving others. Could be as simple as that. You know, we don't have time to read it, but in this very chapter that this class is on, in Luke 10, Martha and Mary are featured there with the famous Martha and Mary. And Mary chose the more focused route. Martha allowed her life to be distracted with really good things, but they were not the most important thing. And as we've become older and as we have more complicated lives and children and just aging parents and financial challenges, there's a lot of things where our lives can become self-serving again, where we are protecting our life. We are building our life. It all looks good, but Jesus says to give up your life, doesn't he? And maybe it's as simple as we have to be willing to, simply put, give up our life and become a fool for Christ once again. I've been inspired by a number of the women in Stockholm. One woman by the name of Mai Stolt. She's 75 years old. And she just is amazing. We decided we needed to start the campus ministry in Stockholm. And there is no campus ministry. And there's not even any students. And not anybody close to the age of being a student. So what do you do in that situation? We have to be willing. So we just called, we had a meeting, and we said, anybody who wants to help out with the campus ministry, come to our house, and we will be the campus ministry. So we had about 25 people come, ranging from the age of 30 to 75. And they all came in the living room, you know, and we took a picture. We were like, okay, take a picture of all of us, you know. It was really quite fun. And we just got the Bible out, we prayed, we made a plan, and we decided this is it. We are the campus ministry. And it was in such a way where Chris and I are the full-time people, so we would go on campus and share our faith. And then anybody else who could get a lunch break or had a day off, they would come on those days and share their faith as well. And then we would have a Bible talk. It was so amazing to see Mai Stolt, age 75, every week, two times a week, she came out onto that campus and just shared her faith for several hours and came to the Bible talk all year. And she continues to do it, and it's just inspiring to see that she's willing, and she's brought visitors, young women who have come, who have, you know, we're beginning to study the Bible. We haven't had the baptisms yet, but it's just starting. And then we have, I think, about people like Alicia and Lindsay. They are two American girls who decided they wanted to be willing. And they're on the other side, somewhere in America, and I got this email, and it said, we're coming on a mission. We're coming to Stockholm to be trained by you, and here's our flight information. I just kind of got it out of the blue. Now, little did they know, they planned it in the month of July, which is like the whole Stockholm church disappears. There is no church in July because everybody's on vacation in that country. But they came, and it was really fantastic to see the way God used them. They got a chance to help with the teen and preteen camp. They got a chance to share their faith with us because we were around. So we went around and shared our faith a lot. And one of them fell in love with a Scandinavian brother. And both made decisions that they're going to come back as students in the fall. And in fall and in January, they're going to do their student internship and they're going to do a year abroad to help us build the campus ministry. Just because they decided they were willing, God has taken them on the most incredible adventure. And so when you could be young, you could be a teen, you can be a single. The question is, are you willing? Are you willing? You just got to throw yourself out there and God will lead your steps in the most amazing, amazing way. Okay. My second point is I want to talk about how can we become fruitful in the mission again? Now, some of you are being fruitful. What does that mean, being fruitful? That means many things. It means growing in your lifestyle and in your character to where you're glorifying God and helping others to become Christians. It's a great thing. But how can I do that? So let's open up to Luke chapter 10. And there's just a few things that I put on my refrigerator in my mind, a few scriptures that I keep around the house, things that I keep close to my heart that help me when I think about the mission and helping those who don't know God. Luke chapter 10. We're going to read here verse 1. It says, after this, the Lord appointed 72 others, and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. He told them, the harvest is plentiful. Chris talked about that last night. But the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves. Do not take a purse or a bag or sandals. Do not greet anyone on the road. When you enter a house, first say, peace to this house. If a man of peace is there, your peace will rest on him. If not, it will return to you. Stay in that house, eating and drinking whatever they give you, for the worker deserves his wages. Do not move about from house to house. When you enter a town and are welcome, eat what is set before you. Heal the sick who are there, and tell them, the kingdom of God is near you. But when you enter a town and are not welcomed, go into its streets and say, even the dust of your town that sticks to our feet, we wipe off against you. You will be sure of this, the kingdom of God is near. I tell you, it will be more bearable on that day for Sodom than for that town. We'll just stop right there. Actually, in verse 16, it says, he who listens to you listens to me, and he who rejects you rejects me. So my second point is this, and I love this. If you have entered their homes, then you have entered their heart. Then you are paving the way for Jesus to come in. And really, it's that simple. You know, our job is for us to pave the way for Jesus to come in. We don't convert the people, but we do pave a way, just like John the Baptist paved the way for Jesus. And here's some specific things that I think they really help me when I think about sharing my faith and about reaching out to the lost. And number one is, just like Jesus said, you need to find a partner. There's strength when we're with someone else. You know, if you look at it, Jesus sent them out two by two, not one by one, not by 10 by 10, but he sent them out two by two. And there's an amazing strength when you got your friend. I was talking with, I think it was Julie over lunch yesterday, Julie D'Souza. And she just said, you know, Kim, it was really cool. There was a sister in another region, maybe the South, in the East. And she called me up and she said, you know, I just, can you come down and can we go out and share our faith? And Julie was honest. She said, I haven't gone out and done that for a long time. And I don't know about the sister, but she decided she would go. The two of them went out. They just started to invite people and share their faith wherever they were in the East. And they met a woman who became a Christian just recently. And she hadn't done it for a really long time and hasn't done it since. But my whole point is, that happened here in your turf. You know, there's something about being with somebody else. You chicken out when you're alone sometimes, don't you? You chicken out. You're like, oh. But when you're with someone else, it's like you're just like a force. In Sweden, I know for me, this whole thought of going and starting the campus ministry, I'm almost 50. And I'm like, 50, who is going to listen to me on the campus? Come on. I was felt so unwilling, you know? But I believe in this principle. So I started to pray, and I started to really look around the church in Stockholm. And there is a sister by the name of Britta Celine. Maybe some of you know her. And she just kind of came out of the ashes, if you will, and said, I really want to go with you. Every time you go, call me. I want to go. And when I can go, I'll call you. And we will just go all year. We made a commitment that we would share our faith together. And so every single week, the two oldies but goodies, that's what we called ourselves, we went on that campus and we just shared our faith. And it was so awesome. We had people weekly with us. We have studies that are ongoing right now of people that her and I met together. But there were those days when I was like, oh, I just don't feel like going. You know that? Oh, you just like, and I'd get that SMS, I'm here, where are you? And I'd be like, oh, I gotta hurry up, you know. Or there would be days when she had been flying. She's a stewardess, and she'd been flying internationally. And we had Bible talk that day, and she just didn't feel like going. But because we were two, we inspired each other. And it was so fantastic. I'm so grateful for her. Some other principles from Luke 10 that I think are really important. Find a partner. Number two, if you get into their home, then you get into their heart. And I really believe this with especially in the family ministry, okay? And this is a little bit about talking about how to have functioning family groups that really are effective in reaching out to other families. A family group has got to be a place where there's that family feeling, where there's love, and where when the people come in, or whether that family group goes to them, that they really see the love and the love, I guess I would just say, the intense love that we have for one another. I asked the sisters on Wednesday, we had midweek this past week in Stockholm, and I asked them to share, we all went around, what made the greatest impression when they first came to church, or to Bible talk, or when Christians came to them. And all the way down the line, every single one of them said it was the love the people had, their togetherness, the way they ate together, the way they had sincere love, where they cared deeply, they went beyond the surface to how they felt, that they felt cared for, that people asked questions, and they followed up with the continual love. And there wasn't, I mean, everybody, like 35 testimonies we had that night, and everybody shared the same thing. And so it's just an amazing thing to realize that in the family ministry, much is done to create love through loving each other and to getting into each other's homes. And just like here, he said, when you go into their house, if they give you your peace, then stay with them. And that's how you know. If someone welcomes you into their heart, into their home, be willing to go into their home, serve them, eat together, eat at their house, then they've given you their heart, and then Jesus has the possibility to come in. It's their choice, but you're paving that way. There's a woman by the name of Catherine who, I was standing in line when Hannah was in Brownies. We have this thing called Brownies. And she was there, and I just talked to her, was friendly, la la la, invited her to church, and she said, you know, I'm looking for a church. But it went like 5 months before she actually first came to something. But in order for that to happen, I think about the many a day where I went over there with Hannah, with Chris. We called and said, hey, what are you guys doing? Do you want to have like a barbecue? And so we said, we'll bring the meat. Let's go over after work and we'll eat together and the kids can play. And we just spent a lot of time in her home, mostly because she had four kids. There were a few times that they came to our home. But it took getting into her heart. You know, her children were her heart. It took serving them and being with them before she finally really allowed herself to come to church. And the great news of that is she came to church and became a Christian a couple months later. It was exciting. And when you ask her, that's the thing she says, is that I just felt loved. I felt that you took me in and I was able to let you into my life. For those of you that have families and children and you're working, how many are in that position where you work professionally and you have children at home or not, but you're married? You're a family person. Quite a few hands. So you know what it's like. Up at 7, out at 8, home at 5, 6, dinner, exhaustion, you can't wait. You think about going to bed even before you get up the next day. right? I have been there. I have been there. And I, before I share on this point, I want to say there are several times in my ministry career where I have worked professionally and led, been the women's ministry leader for 600 in a church of 600 and different numbers. And I've been had many jobs as I've been doing the ministry and full-time jobs and part-time jobs. So I know what it's like to wake up and my husband will say, "How you doing today?" I just, all I'm thinking about was how I can get back to bed before this day starts. I mean, that's that feeling. I relate to that. That exhaustion, and you're pouring out all day to do a great job at your job, and then you've got this mission. You come home, your family, and then you got the mission, and then you got to be married. Or if you're single, it's the same kind of thing. You're working hard, and then you have your single life. So I know what it feels like, but I do believe and know that it's possible to be fruitful again in that situation. And one of the things, especially for families and even married people, you have to find a life rhythm. Now, what do I mean by that? Okay, that means you don't have a whole lot of time. So your life is pretty scheduled, isn't it? There's not a whole lot of free time. But those free blocks of time, which would be evenings and weekends for the most part, depending on your job. You just have to get, what I find works is a life rhythm. And what Chris and I worked out during these periods in our life is that we knew, for example, that Monday night was going to be, or Sunday night or Monday night was going to be our family devotional night. Sometimes we'd have other families with us, and other times we would not. Tuesday night, study the Bible night. That there was a period of time from 7:30 to 9 that could be open for a Bible study. Your study or my study. Whoever had one, that was their time, and the other of us would do the rest of the stuff in the home. Wednesday night. You just know, Wednesday night. It's going to be midweek. Whether it's sisters, brothers, somebody's going to have a midweek, or, you know, it could be Tuesday night, whatever night it's on. It's just the rhythm. Thursday night for us has always been Bible talk. For the last 15 years, I think I've been going to a Thursday night Bible talk. I think it's in my blood. I can't do anything else on Thursday night anymore. But anyway, that's a night where our family would go. Either we would host a Bible talk or we'd go to the park for a Bible talk. But it was our family, and it was often with other families. And one thing about Thursday night in my life, it's always we're eating with other people. And we're always having other kids, you know, families with other kids. Somehow in their home, our home, wherever this Bible talk is going to be, that's what we would do. And it just became, it's a rhythm. I didn't have to think about it or plan. Friday night, we kept open for non-Christians, depending on what ministries we were involved with. And then the weekend would be, you know, there might be a date night for Chris and I, or just family night, or whatever, spontaneous times. Finding a life rhythm really, truly helps. Because you know when you can rest, and you know where you're going to be. And you save mental energy. That's my point. You don't have to, like, what am I doing today? Oh, just, you know, the whole fretting syndrome. You fret so much you don't end up doing anything because you're just worrying about how to get back to bed. But if you know where your body should be, somehow it gets there. And it gives you a lot more emotional freedom to be friendly, to be warm, to meet needs, to, you know, you don't have to think logistically anymore. So that's a suggestion, take it or leave it. Really works for me. Just in the last thing about if you've entered their home, then you've entered their heart, and then Jesus can move in. Don't separate your ministry from your family. I know that sounds like basic, but it's so easy to do. You know, your family is in it together. We talked with Hannah, and you can ask her. You know, we talked with her before moving to Sweden. We said, you know, this is our family is going on a mission. This is not just mommy and daddy. We together are here to serve the Stockholm church. And so it's a family affair. And with your children, they have them a part of whatever you do, not off to the side, not off, you know, in the corners. I know there was this group in Denver that I was inspired about. They had a, it was like this big fat Bible talk with, you know, 40 kids in it. But what they chose to do is they took all the teens and they had the teen Bible talk downstairs and the adults would take turns leading it where they could bring all their friends. And then they had the adult Bible talk going on upstairs. And then they had sort of all the other kids in another place, either at someone's house, if the house was too small, or out in the park or something. And And so it was like a family affair. And they would eat together, and then they would break off for the little evangelistic Bible talks, and then they'd come back together. And when you talked with anyone in their group, they so loved it. Even down to the 6-year-olds loved that night. Because it was a family thing. They loved being together. And we all know you gotta have food. No food, no baptisms. No, I'm teasing. But you know how that is. But especially for families, and I think when we work, right? We work, but what do we have to do when we, what do we usually do when we get home? Dinner! That's right. You have to eat. And if you're on a diet, you know your kids have to eat. Somebody's got to eat. So food is in the mixture here. So, but whether you eat, whether you have people in eating, or you go some other place eating, or you carry your food to some, you can still eat. Doesn't matter where you eat. But sharing it with people is a way to enter their heart. And I tell you, the more, we're doing that a lot more in Stockholm, and it's an amazing, making a huge difference. With people that have sort of been around the church, especially non-Christian husbands are kind of around, and they tend to feel left out because the wife is always involved in something and they're over there in another life. So we're like, just eat dinner together with that family regularly. And what happens is the husbands begin to build best friends. So it's a family thing. Okay, moving on quickly here. Point 3, probably my last. We need to sow generously. Now, our theme in Stockholm is called Sowing the Seeds of Friendship and Love. That's our summer. Sowing the Seeds of Friendship and Love sounds kind of hippie-ish. But actually, it's a great picture. You know, a farmer doesn't like... Effective farmers don't just like take one seed out of their pocket, dig a hole, put one in, you know, and then walk away. I mean, they're like flinging the seed. I mean, they're like as much seed as you can get out to every corner of the fields. They even stretch the fields into the other, rocky places. I grew up in a farm area. So you got to put out a lot of seed. And so our theme for this summer, since people have been coming and going, is just sow the seeds of friendship and love. Be friendly. That is your greatest tool. Just be friendly, and you never know what's going to happen. Just this little girl yesterday, she was so cute. I wanted to eat her. I just couldn't help myself, and I just started chatting with him, and, it didn't go anywhere. But just being friendly has opened so many doors in my life. I want us to look here in Luke 10, verse 25. We're going to look here about what Jesus said on this topic. We all know this very well. On one occasion, verse 25 in Luke 10, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself. And so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side." Oof. "So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." You know, Jesus uses this explanation to show that while we are going to our Jericho from Jerusalem, that's the same path that many lost people are going on as well, and that we need to be looking for opportunities. We're all going from Jericho to Jerusalem. We're all going from here to there, aren't we? All the time. And it wasn't the priest, it wasn't the religious person that actually did right here. It was Samaritan, who a person who could see needs. who had compassion, who had the time, the mental energy to just think, I wonder how they're doing. I wonder how this guy's doing. Look at him. And, you know, not just to, by way of reminder, there are actually everybody out there is hurt and confused, lonely or empty, and they're walking down the same road of life where we are. Everyone. They're in our schools. They're in our neighborhoods. They're at our kids' activities. They're our workmates. I mean, everyone is the robber. I mean, is the person that got attacked by the robber in some sense. And I just really believe we have to be willing to take pity on people. I was at a bus stop one time and taking one of my children to school, and there were all these ladies in a circle, the bus stop ladies. And I actually invited every single one of them except one who I was totally intimidated by. And somehow I always found a reason to not talk to her because she just seemed like, oh, she's totally together. There's no way. Look at her. She's hip, 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 and she's here, pip, pip, and she's got it all together, and I'm just a wreck. I mean, you know, so no. And just somehow, it just I just never got to it. But one day, it was just her and I, and we just struck up a conversation, and I just happened to share that Chris and I had a date night, because this was Tuesday. So Monday night, we had had a date night, and I said, oh, my husband was great. Or she might have asked, what did you do? And I said, oh, we went on a date, and we went here and did that. It was so great. And she just burst out into tears, big old tears that ran right down her shirt. And I was like, oh, did I say something wrong? You know, I was a little bit shocked because she's this together, beautiful, she's Indian, you know, background. I was just like, and she just began to pour out her heart that she and her husband were on the brink of divorce and she didn't know what to do and they had a horrible marriage. And oh, she just went on and on. We stood there for half an hour. Because of that, I was able to invite her to church. We studied the Bible, and she got baptized. Just from being friendly. Just from sharing my life. And that's kind of how it is. You just never know. When you're on your way from Jericho to your Jerusalem, do you have pity? Do you stop? Do you care? Can you just see people? See beyond the, you know, we have to see beyond the outward. And I know you know that. But just as a reminder, we were sitting with Penny and Malcolm today, and I was just looking at some of the people, and I just thought, oh, they just look harassed. They really do. If you really look at people and you wonder about their lives and you really let your imagination go, you just want to run to them and baptize them immediately. But, you know, we have to get their consent, don't we? What have we done in Stockholm? I just thought I'd share some current things. You know, we just got there and we are, you know, we're trying to be a good example for our church because the church is a bit stuck in this area. So we decided that in our neighborhood, we'd have a party, a glögg party. That's a Swedish word. It means, it's this drink, it's like a cider, hot drink you have in the fall, and it's really dark and gloomy, but you can have glögg, and it makes you, you know, kind of more joyful. So we decided to have a glögg party. I think there's alcohol or something in it, but, you know. Anyway, so I made these little invitations, and on the computer, they were really pretty lame. And I just walked around to every house in our neighborhood. It took me about 3 days to get them all out. And just invited them to a drop-in. We are new to the neighborhood. Please come and welcome us to your neighborhood. It's what I wrote. And that was it. So we had it on a Saturday. We had 40 neighbors come. I had no idea. So we sat around drinking glögg and having fun and getting happy. And the great thing from that is that all these people, we have developed the most amazing friendships. Out of that has come, we vacationed with some of them together. One of them is going to come to the Bible talk. They just went on vacation. We have watched the World Cup together. We were invited to Christmas Eve. That's like holy in Sweden, you know. The disciples were like, you were invited to Christmas Eve and you only known them 2 months? You know, like Christmas Eve is like sacred family deal. But, you know, people, they just, because we had them in our home, we've been invited into their home, and I can just see the doors opening. So another idea that really works, at least in our cult, in our town, is that because people are really busy, especially on a Friday, one thing that I heard this from some non-Christians, actually in Hannah's school. This woman said, yeah, I have this great neighborhood, and we just, what we do is we just, right after work, we meet at someone's house and we have a quick glass of wine and some cheese, you know, like a happy hour type time, and we talk, and then we go back with our families for the rest of the night. And I thought, what a great idea. So we decided that we'd invite a few of the neighbors over for just the quick, after the work, you know, hey, let's catch up. And out of that came that we met this one couple who wants to come to the Bible talk. So, you know, it doesn't take the whole night. It doesn't take all the planning, but you get into their heart. When you get into the heart, you pave the way for Jesus. Another thing that we are focusing on in our lives is that you don't have time to have like 50,000 friends and be with everybody all the time. And not everybody is open or like totally wide open. You have people who are at different points in their lives. And so if you can imagine yourself in the center, we call it, you can build this concentric ring of relationships where, you know, you have people right, the sort of the most open people that you might meet with every week to study, they're in the closest circle. And then maybe the next circle is comprised of people who maybe they're coming to church a little bit here and there, but they're not ready to really make a commitment. They're just kind of around. And so you might get with them, you know, every so often. And then you have a next ring, maybe of people that you've recently met, they know you're a Christian, you've invited them, but they haven't come, but they've expressed some interest. And so you've got that level, you know, and you might nurture and build that relationship up, you know, once a month or, you know, something like that. And then you have another ring of those that you just met and those that you're just meeting that maybe, you know, they're not quite interested. Maybe they're husbands to non-Christians in the church that have been around, or maybe they're your relatives or your parents. They're people that are not really interested, but you're still working on them. So we have people around us at all these different phases. And it's God that brings the harvest. We just need to love them and fit them in. You know, the more open ones, maybe it's more frequent, but not forgetting all these other circles around us. And that's a great way to think about your ministry and keeping it organized. Well, there's much, much to say, but I will just say this. Just a last little tip when it comes to reaching out to the non-Christian husbands that we might have, or maybe it's a wife, I really, really believe it's by way of friendship. And something Chris and I have been a part of, it must be now like 8 couples whose the woman has become a Christian, and then many years later the husband has become a Christian. And some of the things that have worked, one of the dynamics that I've seen is the husband needs to feel like the Christians are his best friend, without the pressure of studying the Bible, without the pressure of coming to church, but that you do things like Chris, he starts this bike ministry, and so the guys do the biking ministry, for example. And that's the only time they see each other, but it becomes biking, which leads into what do you do after you bike? You got to eat. So then all the families come and we eat together. And that, you know, we used to do that every Saturday. And many of these husbands, through that, started opening up. Well, you get into talks. We have a couple that live right next to us. The woman is a Christian and has been forever, but the husband's not. But he was never around. And I was like, why is he never around? And it's just sort of like people just forgot about him. So we just decided that we were going to have big, big dinners before our Bible talks. And but I made a personal invitation for him. We'd like to invite you and your wife over for dinner. So we did that. And then the next time it was dinner and the Bible talk. And now he's a regular. Now he comes to the dinner because he loves to eat. And he's just at the Bible talk. He's not studying. He's not sure whether he believes, but he's starting to he's starting to discuss and debate a little bit. That's the kind of thing. It takes time. But if they're not our friends, we don't have their heart and Jesus cannot come in. That's my whole point. Well, ladies, those are just some tips, some practical, some things. I hope they're helpful. You know, as we read here in closing in Luke 10, one of the most obvious points, and I don't want to leave it out, is the Bible does say here in 10 verse 2, it says, the harvest is plentiful. We need to believe that. But the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. You know, all that I've shared today cannot be done, of course, without prayer. We need to ask God to send us out to be willing, to send others out to be willing. But we need to involve Jesus in the process through prayer. We can't go in our own strength. You know, it's truly God and his Holy Spirit that orchestrates these things. But we must be willing. Jesus was willing. And the question is, are we? And then we need to decide that to get into people's homes. Because if we get into their home, then we've entered their heart. And then make a decision to be friendly. Sow the seeds of love and friendship. And God will really, really bless your efforts. Thank you. Have a great day.
Amen. That was awesome. Thank you so much, Kim, for sharing your heart. Thank you so much. For a lot of us here, most of us here are disciples. There might be a few people that are visiting, but it's just good to be reminded about why we're following Jesus and how to follow Jesus. And I thank you for coming up here, sharing the word, but also being an example from the things you shared about your willingness. Because sometimes it can be difficult. As women, we become Christians. So many of us have been Christians for some time. Some of us are young Christians. And we made that decision when we became a Christian to be willing. But you know, life continues. And sometimes 10 years later, there are decisions we need to be made again about being willing. And just your example of constantly going before God and being willing. So thank you for that. Thank you for the practicals that you've shared. It's great to hear all the stories. I've written down the Glurg party, and I'm sure we can make up some things that are like that. But thank you so much. And, you know, sisters, I'm just really encouraged by the lesson. I'm very, very encouraged. And I hope that most of us have been able to take something, if not a lot of things. I've definitely embraced quite a few things. It was very, very helpful for me to be reminded that God gives us opportunities to sow love and compassion all the time. And it's about releasing our emotional energy and being willing to see that. That is what I've taken out of it all the time in our journey, whether from Jericho to Jerusalem or Jerusalem to Jericho. There are opportunities all around us. And I want to take that away. I want to remember that on my way to work in the morning, when I'm coming back, lunchtime, when I'm with the sisters, wherever it is, my neighborhood, that there are opportunities out there. So I hope we've taken that on board. I want to just wrap up this session by reminding us that we've learned that God wants us to be willing. And we can depend on God for that. We can ask God and say, God, I'm finding this difficult. Help me to be willing. And God, who does miracles, he is able to do the miracles in our hearts, can help us to be willing. And again, just reminding us that, you know, the way to reach people or to pave the way for God is to get into their hearts. And again, Kim has given us lots of ideas and ways to do that. But help us, let us remember that the goal is to try and get into people's heart through love. And to remember that then God can work. Then God can work. And remind us as women, let's take our families with us. Let's not think, let's do it on our own. You know, God has called us to be, he's blessed us with these families. Let us take them with us and God will use us. Okay. And then finally, let's constantly sow. Let's remember that there are opportunities all around us. Thank you so much, Kim, for sharing this with us. Okay, after this class, just to remind us of what we've got, at 3:00, we have the privilege of hearing, for those of us that are parents, Adrian and Maureen Hill are going to be doing the Good Enough Parenting. Amen.